time to wake up. It's Saturday morning. Find some milk and cereal. Grab a bowl and spoon. No, a bigger spoon. Head to the living room and take a seat on the floor while Joseph and Chris present to you
Saturday Morning Cartoon!
Hello everybody and welcome to Saturday Morning Cartoon Boom! This is a show where we wake up with the Saturday morning sun, plop down in the living room floor with a big bowl of sugary cereal and watch all your favorite cartoons, both old and new. I'm Joseph.
And I'm Chris. I love this theme song so much.
Yeah, it's a cool theme song.
It's so awesome. It's so like, man, they just embraced like the 80s in this movie as much as they possibly could. They were like, you know what? We need a big hair metal version of the regular Transformers theme song. Like, what can we do? And they're like, all right, let's put lots of synth wave and let's have as many guitar solos as possible. And
gotta have some dudes screaming.
Yeah, big drums. Yeah, we got to have some like Motley Crue sounding vocals going on. Man, they went for it and they accomplished what they set out to do.
So this was actually done for your birthday. So at this point, it's already been your birthday. So happy early birthday from where we are. Happy late birthday from where the listeners are.
Yeah, happy early and late birthday to me.
Transformers the movie aired in 1986. Created by Hasbro and Takara Tomy, directed by Nelson Shin, written by Ron Friedman, produced by Sunbow Productions, Marvel Productions, and Toei Animation. This was actually released in the box office when it initially came out, so that's kind of rare for these animated movies, so good on it.
Man, I wish that I was old enough to have seen it in the theater, because I feel like that would have been super cool.
Yeah, we would have been like 1 year old, I think. So I hope they didn't take us, because kids are terrible. Don't take your baby to the theater.
Yeah, don't, because I probably don't like you.
For a source synopsis, the Autobots must stop a colossal planet-consuming robot who goes after the Autobot Matrix of Leadership. At the same time, they must defend themselves against an all-out attack from the Decepticons.
The proverbial robo shit hits the fan in this movie.
You know, it's funny that you say that, because this is actually the version that I think we both watched actually had that word in it, the S word in it.
Yes,
From Spike. And I'm skipping ahead a little bit on my marshmallows, but that wasn't actually aired in all of the VHS releases of this movie that was taken out of. And it wasn't, I think, until it came back on DVD in some way that was brought back.
Yeah, I've got the DVD version and yeah, it's definitely in there. And I think it's, they say that and they also say it also.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But that one they left in because I remember him saying that as a kid and me being like, whoa.
Yeah, I think you can still get away with that, but the S word is just a much harsher word. So yeah. I was surprised to hear it. It kind of came out of nowhere.
Right.
So Chris, who were some of the actors who played in this movie?
Okay, so settle in, because this is a very long list of actors, because there's so many characters. There's so many great voice actors in this this movie. So here we go. First of all, Optimus Prime and Ironhide, voiced by Peter Cullen, who we have talked about a lot on the show as of late. He was in the last episode that we did, Saber Rider and the Star Sheriffs. He's also Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh. His counterpart here, playing the voices of Megatron, Soundwave, Rumble, and Wheelie, is Frank Welker, another person that shows up in our show constantly. He was Fred from Scooby-Doo. He was Jabberjaw, Dinomutt. He was Iceman and Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. He was Dark Rider in Turbo Teen, one of the worst cartoons we've ever seen in our lives. And Dr. Claw in Inspector Gadget. I wonder if you guys can hear, like, it's thunderstorming here. So I think it was kind of fun that there was, like, thunder when I said Dark Rider in Turbo Teen. So if that carries through, awesome. If not, aw. The voice of Bumblebee was Dan Gilvezan, who was Spider-Man from Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. He was also Questar in Dino Riders, which we watched not that long ago, and he was the voice of Sean Harrison in Jim, which we'll do eventually, I think, probably. I don't know. Spike Witwicky was Corey Burton. He was Dale from The Rescue Rangers. He was James Bond Jr. He was Brainiac in Superman, Justice League, and Justice League Unlimited. And he was Count Dooku from Clone Wars. Oh, man. My mouth's getting tired, dude. The voice of Jazz, Scatman Crothers. He's a famous singer and comedian who also voiced Scat Cat in Aristocats, and he was in the Harlem Globetrotters cartoons. There was multiple for some reason. And he was the voice of Hong Kong Phooey. The voice of Cliff Jumper was Casey Kasem. He was originally Shaggy in Scooby-Doo, Robin in the Super Friends, and he played Mark in Battle of the Planets, which we actually subsequently talked about on our last episode, even though that wasn't the actual cartoon we reviewed in the last episode. It just happens to come up all the time. Love of Jesus. Starscream, voiced by Christopher Collins. You may also recognize that crazy voice as Cobra Commander in G.I. Joe. We had Hot Rod, a.k.a. Rodimus Prime, who was voiced by Judd Nelson, who was the star in Breakfast Club, St. Elmo's Fire, and he is also the voice of Aeon in Ben 10 Omniverse. Daniel Witwicky was David Mendenhall, who played Randy Cheng in Centurions and Brother Bear in The Bernstein Bears. I'm like halfway through.
You're getting there.
The voice of Cup was Lionel Stander, who's done tons of movies from the 30s all the way through the 90s. Most notably, played a character named Max in the TV series Heart to Heart. RC was voiced by Susan Blue, who was Mona from Toxic Crusaders, Belfry from Ghostbusters, Princess Pawpaw, and the notorious Flim Flam from The 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo. Unfortunately. Ultra Magnus was Robert Stack, who was the main character from the Untouchables TV series and the host of Unsolved Mysteries, which was a show I loved as a kid. He's unfortunately no longer with us, as is several members of this cast, like Lionel Standard and some of the other ones I'm about to talk about in a minute. Springer was voiced by Neil Ross, who was the original voices of Keith and Pidge in Voltron Defenders of the Universe, and he also voiced Keith again in Voltron the Third Dimension. He's also the voice of John Rambo in the Rambo cartoon series. Did you know there is a Rambo cartoon series?
Of course there's a Rambo cartoon series.
Why not? Rambo seemed like a thing for kids. The voice of Grimlock was Greg Berger, who was the Grumble in Real Monsters, and the voice of Junkyard from Toxic Crusaders, which we did about a month ago. The voice of Perceptor was Paul Eating, who is the voice of Max in Ben 10 and Nozone in Toxic Crusaders. Lots of Toxic Crusaders people in Transformers here. Blur was John Machida Jr., who is the fastest talking man in the world and best known for doing the voiceovers for Micro Machines toys during the 80s and 90s. Do you remember that? Like super, super fast talking, like Micro Machines.
That's really cool that they actually got the guy. Cause I thought they had just like artificially sped up Blur's voice, but that's awesome.
I always thought that too, but no, that is his legitimate voice. It's
that's amazing.
Crazy. And then we've got three more, and these are some of our more notable actors making a transition to animation here. So Wreck-Gar was Eric Idle, who is famous for all the Monty Python series, like Life of Brian, Monty Python's Flying Circus, and you can't forget Monty Python and the Holy Grail. The voice of Galvatron was Leonard Nimoy, who is Spock in Star Trek and Dr. William Bell in Fringe, both amazing sci-fi roles. Unfortunately, another actor that is no longer with us, as well as this very final one, the voice of Unicron was Orson Welles, who's a famous actor who actually started his career by writing, directing, and starring in Citizen Kane, which is actually often regarded as the greatest film ever made. But my God, this voice cast is crazy, right? Yeah, there's so many people and there's huge names and they're so talented.
It is insane. And what sucks is like this was Orson Welles' last anything, really.
From what I read, I think he died 4 days after finishing his voice work for this movie.
Yeah, like 4 or 5 days afterwards of just a heart attack, like just natural causes, because he was, I don't remember how old he was at that time, but he was an older man for sure, and his health was failing.
Oh, yeah. He was horribly obese.
Yeah.
From what I understand, that's part of the reason they sought him for Unicron, was because he was so massive and his voice was so deep, it just added that extra oomph to everything he said over the microphone. So, like, they sought him specifically for this role.
Yeah, and they ended up having to, because a lot of times his voice came through really distorted, or it wouldn't, you know, he didn't really have the energy to give it his all. So they had to, they added some like effects to it after the fact. And that's what kind of gives it that tingy or just kind of a metallic sound to it at times, which actually adds to it. But
yes,
they initially had just planned on using his original voice.
But I mean, it sounds amazing. Like, this sounds like the voice of a planet. You know, like, it's exactly what it, what it's supposed to be. It is fantastic. I love it.
Mm-hmm. So for a few tasty marshmallows out of our big bowl of Transformer cereal, the film story takes place in 2005, 20 years after the events of the TV series second season, and serves to bridge into the third season. So it's actually cool because it is, you know, if you had been keeping up with the series at that point, it comes right after the second season and is the connector to the third season. So this is one of those, it's part of the series. It's not just a one, you know, a one shot. It's actually, everything that happens in this is part of the universe, and it's all canon,
which
connects the story.
It's super risky, including this is canon based on the things that happen, which we'll get to as we discuss it, but like, based on what happens to the majority of the characters that you, you know, this was a huge risk.
And I didn't catch the third season of Transformers, I don't think. So I'm not even sure how they pick it up with all that. But
I've got some insight to it, but I'll talk about that towards the end, as long as I remember.
Secondly, IDW published its own adaptation of this film in 2006. This includes extra scenes such as a battle between the missing Combiners and Omega Supreme at the Ark, and Shockwave and Reflector being destroyed by Unicron. When it says IDW published its own adaptation, I'm pretty sure it's just talking about a graphic novel rendition of it.
Yeah, I would assume so. You know, that's cool though, because that kind of that sort of answers a few questions I've got. Well, at least if I haven't read it, but if I read it, that might answer a few questions, because there were some notable characters missing from the movie, Omega Supreme being one of them.
I had read that somewhere too, that some of the characters, even though some of those characters were originally in the film, they were cut out for one reason or another. Some of them are even credited at the end and weren't even in it, or may have just had a, you know, a moment in it without actual audio, or the voice got cut out to the last minute. So there were a lot of edits on this.
Yeah. I was wondering, because I mean, there's three big Autobots missing from this movie that I was like, if they had those, the fight would have been way different. Like, well, Snarl was missing. He's one of the Dinobots. He probably wouldn't have had as big of an impact, but we only had four instead of five, which I thought was strange. But Omega Supreme was missing, and he's gigantic, so that would have definitely turned the tide in their favor. And the Aerial Bots were missing. If they had formed Superion, him going up against Devastator, things would have been way different.
Yeah, I don't know. Also, this film was budgeted at $6 million, six times greater than the budget used to create 90 minutes of the regular cartoon series. So,
wow.
Yeah, six times more expensive than just creating basically three connecting episodes. Lastly here, and I only say lastly because there's like a bajillion trivia things on this, and I didn't want to write them all down. But Stan Bush's song, The Touch, which is prominently featured in this film, was originally written for Sylvester Stallone's film Cobra.
Interesting.
But you will hear that song a lot in this movie.
It's the most 80s song ever made. That's that's the best way I can describe it. And I love it so much. You got the touch. Do, do, do. You got the power. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
You're welcome.
I'm sure you have memories of this movie. What memories do you have?
Oh my God. I have seen this movie more times than I can count, more times than is probably healthy. There was times that I literally watched it like a couple times in a row. It's a movie that I find myself watching at least once a year, sometimes more. Aside from like X-Men, Transformers is probably my go-to world. Like, I just love the world of Transformers. I love the idea. I love the characters. I don't know what it was originally about this movie that stuck out to me as a kid, but I think I love it even more as an adult, because there's a lot of things going on that I feel like I wouldn't have understood as much as a kid. This is, it gets a little different than the show. This gets way more serious. There's way higher stakes. It's a lot more adult in the things that happen, and there's a lot more like politics behind the scenes going on too. So, So I don't know. I love the film and I've seen it so many times.
I think I've only seen this movie once before when I was a kid. I have not seen this movie any since I've been an adult. So this is my first time seeing it with adult eyes. And I think my dad had a big, I know he did. He had this big like cardboard Transformers poster. So he loved this movie.
Nice.
And, he had hung it in my room, and that's my memory of this movie more than actually the movie itself. Because, like I said, I watched it maybe once when I was a kid, and then I've just known about it since, but haven't watched it again. So cool. This was a nice refresher.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've even read some comics that were tangentially connected to it in some ways.
Nice.
So now going back and reading those comics, some of those parts might make more sense to me since I'm like, oh, yeah, that's what happened.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, Unicron is like a, he's a big deal in the Transformers world. And I think that's part of the reason I love this movie, especially because like he's the biggest bad you can pretty much get in almost any TV series. I'm like, I can't think of like a villain bigger than this, like both literally and figuratively. Yeah. And he has such an impact on other shows. Like, there's a lot of other iterations of Transformers, like Transformers Prime. He's even, like, even though Beast Wars is, like, so separated from the regular Transformers, Unicron ends up becoming such a huge, huge focal point of that show. And it starts out behind the scenes, and you don't realize what's going on until towards the end. And then you're like, oh, my God. So, yeah, dude, like this movie is just, it starts all of that stuff. So I love it.
Great start to it. So why don't we get started talking about it and just dive right in? I think it actually opens with Unicron. Or actually, no, it opens on Cybertron. It opens on this other planet.
Yeah. They're like a planet of like robot scientists, it looks like.
But they're also, I mean, well, yes, but then some of them are also just like frolicking or just like running around. So
yeah, some
just,
of them are like children, basically.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
It is interesting. There's a lot about the Transformer world that's a little confusing to me, but I accept it and I run with it. So
right.
But that's, fortunately or unfortunately for them, that piece doesn't last very long, as this is where Unicron makes his appearance and basically starts eating the planet.
Like, right off the bat, I gotta say, for one, I love the music, especially, like, the music when Unicron is involved. Man, it's so, like, foreboding, and you just know something's about to go down. And two, the animation is gorgeous in this movie. It's,
oh, yeah.
It's so beautiful. Like, just... It's nothing like Transformers ever had before.
With the eating of the planet, like what it essentially, it's almost like he's a giant vacuum cleaner because he just literally yeah. starts like sucking it all in. What I liked about this one part was, this one pair tried to escape on this ship and just the vacuum was so strong that it just dragged their ship right back in with it. With yeah. the planet, so they couldn't escape. Essentially, if you're in a certain proximity of Unicron, you're gonna get taken in.
But yeah, and it's not like he just sucks in. It's like he's got these two, like, not really claws, but like horns, basically.
If you look at that, that opening as a mouth, just imagine it as like mandibles.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good way to describe it. It's like mandibles. They just kind of impale the planet and hold on to it as it rips it apart and sucks everything. And it's like he. When it gets inside of him, it all gets mashed up and basically it gets turned into energy and it helps power him.
He truly is like eating it, you know, for yes. energy in the same way that we would eat something for energy. That's what he's yeah. doing. I just have to ask the question, like, how did Unicron come into existence? And maybe there's some lore on that, but I don't know it.
Well, basically all you need to know, like the original two Transformers were Unicron and Primus. It's like a duality sort of thing. Like there first existed two beings, Unicron and Primus being the good, Unicron being the ultimate evil.
It's kind of funny that you say that actually, because in one of the original scripts, and this isn't what they ended up using, obviously, one of the original scripts for this, since this was really rewritten and retold so many times, Primus or Cybertron was supposed to be, or he was going to transform into Primus. And in his robot form, and there was going to be like a big battle between between Unicron and Primus, but that didn't end up happening. So, yeah.
So that's an interesting tidbit to know, because I didn't know that originally they were going to have Cybertron and Primus be one and the same. So,
mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah. And this, like I said earlier, this takes place in the year 2005. So, you know, the distant future, past for us.
You know, I remember 2005, and I feel like we didn't really meet the expectations of this movie.
What I'm assuming is that in our true universe, Unicron was successful in absorbing Cybertron and all the Transformers, and thus is why we don't see any of them today on Earth.
Oh, okay, yeah. So, like, yeah. They never made it to Earth.
Right, because Unicron got them.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I thought so.
Well, one thing that I think is kind of interesting is, like, Spike's all grown up, because Spike was, like, a teenager in the cartoons, like in the show. Mm-hmm. And now he's, you know, he's a fully grown adult. He's got a kid of his own named Daniel that looks a lot like him. And his kid Daniel is friends with the Autobots and stuff, just like he was. But first, we got to get into, there's a big scene here that changes everything. It sets the tone of this whole movie, and that's... There is a shuttle of Autobots heading to Autobot City from one of the... They've got two moon bases. One is going from there to Autobot City, which is on Earth. And Megatron had sent a spy, Laserbeak, to basically listen in on him, knew what was going on. So they intercept this shuttle, and the Decepticons get on there and basically just clean house and kill everybody on board. But the reason that's a big deal is because it was like all these G1 characters that we love. Brawn, Prowl, Ratchet, Ironhide all bite the dust, man.
Yeah, and so quickly and almost effortlessly. It's like a lot of these characters are just thrown away in this movie.
That was really weird to me. And God, that scene was awful for me as a kid. I was like, no! Like, Brawn I never really cared about, but like I loved Prowl and Ironhide and Ratchet. So I was like, But what, some of this was kind of weird, and there are a couple of issues with this movie as much as I like it. Like, Brawn dies from getting shot in the shoulder, and it's like all of these years of the Decepticons and the Autobots battling, and somehow they take these four down within seconds. And like, why?
Because plot, Chris.
Because plot. So they blow the hell out of all of those Autobots, and they... take over the ship, and it's approaching Autobot City, and that's where we see Hot Rod, who's kind of, I mean, there's a lot of main characters in this, but I would say Hot Rod's probably like the main character. Like, Hot Rod is the Jon Snow of this movie. So, yeah,
and you wouldn't really expect him to be at first. Like, he doesn't come off that way, but you start seeing him more and more as the movie progresses.
Yeah, he's hanging out with Spike's son, Daniel. They're fishing, and then they see the shuttle coming, and Daniel's like, oh, we got to watch it land. And so they go up to this point to watch it, and on the journey up to this mountain so they can get a good look, they, like, blow through some Autobots doing road construction and, like, slam into Cup, who's, like, super pissed off. I love Cup, man.
He's so good. He's a grumpy old man.
He is. He's like a grumpy war veteran, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
He's great.
And Daniel blows up like this hover board or something.
Yeah, he's got like a hover surfboard thing, like a flying surfboard, and he crashes it because he's dumb.
Yeah.
You know how like everybody's favorite old cartoons has that one kid that sucks? And that's Daniel in this one. He's not always terrible, but there's parts where you're just like, ugh.
For the most part, he is terrible, though. He's like an unfunny version of Morty in Rick and Morty.
Oh, that's a really good way to describe him. Yeah.
Like he's just clumsy and kind of in the way most of the time.
Yeah, luckily there's a lot of the movie that he's not really involved in, but the parts that he is, you're just kind of like, eh. Luckily, some of the other characters kind of make up for it, and that they steal the limelight whenever he's in a scene for the most part. But
yeah, plus he's so tiny compared to everybody else. He kind of really gets literally shadowed over.
He could have gotten stepped on and I would have been okay with it.
Okay, well, let's lay out why they're first going to this Autobot city on Earth, because the Decepticons at this point have taken over Cybertron, and the Autobots are on, I think, two of the three Cybertron moons. Like they're kind of holding up hidden bases, almost like Yavin 4 in the Star Wars universe. They're holding up little hidden bases on these moons, and or the forest moon of Endor, whatever you want to say. So just to stay out of sight of the Decepticons while they try to build enough of their, you know, rebellion force to strike back and take Cybertron back. And they're sending off this ship to back to Earth in order to, I can't remember actually why. Like, why do you remember why they're sending them back to Earth?
Well, it's basically like, I think that they had been stockpiling lots of Energon there.
And, oh, that's right. They needed more Energon.
Yeah, and Prime wasn't there. They knew Optimus wasn't there. He was sending some other people. And the shuttle, they're like, if we can take this shuttle, we can get into the city undetected because they're not going to scan their own shuttle. So they're basically, mm-hmm. It was basically a Trojan horse thing. They were like, okay, we can finally make our big push and obliterate the majority of the Autobot army by sneaking in through their own shuttle. And that's exactly what they do.
And it really kind of felt like, in an inadvertent way, had Unicron not stepped in and struck, the Decepticons would have had a huge advantage over them at that point.
Yeah, I honestly think so. I mean, it's kind of hard because it's hard to say because, man, we'll get into this battle here, but good Lord, this battle was brutal.
Oh, I love that battle. Yeah.
It starts out because, like, when Hot Rod and Daniel go to see the shuttle coming in, Daniel notices that there's a hole in the shuttle. So Hot Rod kind of looks at it. He sees Starscream kind of his wing kind of hanging out of the side and starts firing, blows a hole in the shuttle. Cup and his Autobots doing construction are like, what the hell is going on? So they head over there, and then the Megatron's basically like, all right, cover's blown, let's go. But they're already basically right outside the doors of Autobot City. So, I mean, might as well.
Mm-hmm.
But every big Decepticon is there. And so this is basically Megatron's, this is the biggest push the Decepticons have ever made. Yeah, and you feel it too, because like it gets crazy. This is the craziest like animated battle I think I've ever seen in a cartoon, because it is just brutal.
Yeah, and it makes kind of practical use of everybody in some way. Like Soundwave has the tapes that are kind of, I guess, living inside of him come out and transform. And they, you know, block the signal that was going to go back to Cybertron to get help.
Oh, yeah. Blaster, who is like the Autobot version of Soundwave, was sending a message to Optimus Prime, and they interrupt it and destroy it. And then it's kind of fun because Blaster's got the same deal. He's got those little guys inside of him. And so he lets his out, and they're all like fighting each other. And that was a cool scene.
The little tapes versus tapes. That was cool. The Decepticon bugs, who I never really see do anything, even get a chance to do something here. They start chewing through like the main door. I guess that's their thing, is just kind of chewing through steel.
Yep. So basically, like, Autobot City can transform into like basically a giant fortress just covered with guns and turrets. So the other Autobots, the main ones on at the space, this is Ultra Magnus, who is kind of the leader in Autobot City. He's got Perceptor with him, that's kind of like an advisory sort of role. Then he's got Blur and Springer and RC, which are all soldiers. You've got Hot Rod, who I don't really know exactly if he's supposed to be a soldier or what he is. Like, Hot Rod comes off as kind of a teenager who's like not really within a specific, I don't know, it's like he doesn't have a specific role. He's just kind of there. And Cup, who is obviously a veteran.
That's why they're just like, you know, watch Daniel, Hot Rod. That's your job.
Yeah, basically, you just take care of the kid.
He's a babysitter.
So they're doing these things to get the city to transform, to get the guns out. The Decepticons are attacking everything. Some of the guns they have to manually shoot themselves because they're desperate really quick because the Decepticons just took them by surprise.
Devastator comes out. I love the Constructicon, any Constructicon. And, you know, Devastator is just awesome because it's just this huge, you know, huge Decepticon robot that's a combination of, you know, four or five, however many there were of the Constructicons. Right. And it starts striking.
It was like ripping buildings in half and stuff. It's crazy.
Optimus Prime drives in with his mysterious trailer that disappears when he transforms.
Well, first think of the Dinobots like in there too, because
Oh yeah, the Dinobots do jump in to
Dinobots
to
jump
fight
in and
Devastator.
Start fighting Devastator, which is a great battle.
Yes, it's always awesome seeing the Dinobots. I mean, Grimlock just talking is hilarious.
He's the best. But yeah, you're saying Prime comes in.
Yeah. Prime comes in. He transforms. His trailer goes away to unknown realms.
Right,
I think we've talked about that before, but I don't know where it goes.
And you get the, you got the touch.
Right. And because then it comes down to Megatron Optimus standoff, the standoff, you know.
Oh man, he like
that is
blows away so many Decepticons before he gets there. Though, like Prime comes in and just kills everybody. Like,
yeah,
it's insane. But yeah, he gets that big showdown's about to happen with him and Megatron, and this is the battle of all battles, man.
This was such a cool battle because they like they're using like everything at their disposal. They use both their cannons, you know, Optimus Prime's like giant pistol cannon, and then. Megatron's giant hand cannon, and then Megatron even pulls out like a lightsaber of some sort, some kind of energy sword, and it even comes to the point where I think Megatron goes down and Optimus picks up his gun, Megatron's gun, to come over to finish him off, and he gets so close to doing it, but Hot Rod jacks it up. Hot Rod messes it up for everybody.
Well, Hot Rod thought he was helping because Megatron is down. Like, and one thing I like about this too is you see both of them, like both Optimus and Megatron, have taken so much damage. They're like leaking from places. There's like wires hanging out. Like they're literally falling apart. Like their metal is cracked everywhere. Like these two are both about done. Megatron is pleading for his life, but he's doing it like he's faking it because he sees a gun that Prime doesn't see because it's covered by some rebel. So he's like slowly crawling forward, begging for mercy. And Prime gives that speech like, you know, you who is without mercy now pleads for it. You know, basically just kind of like you wouldn't grant mercy and now you're begging for it. Like,
right.
I thought you had more guts than this kind of thing. Like, he's ready to kill Megatron, but Hot Rod sees Megatron going for that gun that Prime doesn't see. So Hot Rod tries to tackle Megatron, but Megatron gets him in a headlock, grabs the gun, and shoots Prime, I think twice in the torso where Prime was already really damaged, and then shoots him in the face. Just about obliterates Prime.
Those wounds obviously end up being fatal.
But at least, like, Prime gets that last smack into Megatron, because Megatron, like, stands over him, and he's about to finish him off, and Prime his never moment, and, like, just both fists holding together, slams him with his arms, and Megatron goes flying off this, like, not really a cliff, but, like, this big platform of some of these buildings, and he hits a couple times, and Megatron's hardly even functioning at that point, but Prime is down.
Yeah, they're essentially both down and out. And Megatron would have been killed off, but I think Soundwave comes in and rescues him.
Yeah, well, that's what I like too, is like Starscream. Well, and one thing about Starscream too, because like even though Starscream's kind of a sniveling little, you know, he takes advantage of situations, like really early on in the fight, when the city was transforming, his foot got caught in something and he blew his own foot off out of there. So I was like, dang, like Starscream, as sniveling as he is, I was like, that was a badass moment. He shoots off his own foot.
He's just a survivor is what he is.
Yeah, but here he like kicks Megatron when he's down. He's like, how's it going, mighty Megatron? Pow!
Yeah. What I loved about this actually was where, you know, they get saved. Oh, okay, well, that comes in a second, but so Megatron gets rescued and they go back to the ship to escape.
Yeah.
We come back to Prime and he's on the operating table and, you know, they're trying to see what they can do. And his wounds are fatal. So he, at this point, has to hand over his matrix of leadership, which is the, you know, the giant crystal inside of his chest, and to basically a new leader of the Autobots because he knows his time is short. In this instance, Ultra Magnus is, I guess, next in command, so he hands it over to him.
It was an interesting moment, though, because, like, so Prime is, he's dying, and he tries to hand the Matrix over, but his hand gives out, and it drops, and Hot Rod catches it first, and then, which, you know, it doesn't seem that significant at first, but it's a significant thing.
It's like a foreshadowing. Yeah,
it's a foreshadowing, and then Hot Rod presents it to Ultra Magnus and helps him put it in Ultra Magnus's chest, and then one thing I like during this scene is Prime doesn't have pupils in his eyes, you know? It's just their lights, basically. But they animate his eyes so well during this death scene that you can tell, like, even if you had the sound on, you could tell what's going on just by watching, like, how open and shut his eyes become and the animations there. It's so subtle, but, man, they did such a good job. But then Prime dies, and it's interesting here because, oh man, the music that's playing is creepy, and he starts going, the color drains from his whole body. It turns like black and
the light fades from his eyes.
Yeah. And his head just falls over to the side, and everybody's like crying. Man, I was crying as a kid. Like, I cried so much. Like, I, as an adult, I would have cried if I hadn't seen this a billion times already.
Right.
But it's a tough scene.
It is. That's conversely to that, though, we jump over to the Decepticons, who are on their ship headed back to wherever the Cybertron, I'm assuming. Yeah. And they're like, we don't have enough fuel to get back with the weight we have aboard. So they are like, we have to, I think Starscream is like, we just have to jettison something. Like, we have to get rid of dead weight. And so there's all these wounded Decepticons from the battle that just occurred, including Megatron. And so Starscream is just like, all right, you're out. And or it's basically like a yay or nay thing. And they just start voting them out. And that includes Megatron, which, of course, Starscream takes great pleasure in just kicking him off the ship. And it comes down to kind of at that point, who's going to be the new leader? And in the way that the it was very special and a tender moment with the Autobots, it's just complete. It's kind of just war between the potential leaders with the Decepticons. Oh, yeah. And it's just a fight to see who's left standing and who's the big boss.
The big factions were Starscream, Soundwave, and the Constructicons.
Right. And the Constructicons, it makes sense because they can turn into Devastator was their point. So they're the biggest and most powerful.
I think Soundwave was vying for it because he's always been Megatron's aide. Starscream's just so, you know, into himself and charismatic and all that. He thinks it's his destiny. So, of course, he's going to fight for it. And
right. He's been trying to take it from Megatron this whole time.
Oh, yeah. Like day one. So,
yeah.
What's interesting here, though, is that so the Decepticons get poured out, which is pretty much they're like plain guys aside from Starscream. So it's like Thundercracker, and I don't remember the blue one's name, and the Insecticons, and I think one or two other guys, and then Megatron. You know, they all get thrown out of Astro Train, and they're like floating through space, and eventually they end up close to Unicron, who kind of brings them forward and basically says that he wakes Megatron up and says that he summoned him, and they have this kind of exchange. Unicron makes him an offer. He's like, basically, you're damaged. You're going to die. So I'm going to make you this offer. Either I'm going to kill you and finish you off, or I'll give you new bodies, like you and all your guys. I'll give you new bodies. I'll give you a new ship, but you'll be under my control, and you have to go destroy the Autobot matrix of leadership for me. And after a little bit of torture, Megatron accepts.
Yeah, he is basically an offer he couldn't refuse, even with all his pride, where he's like, you know, what do I get out of this and everything? And he's like, well, you're not really in any place to bargain because you're either going to die or you're going to do this for me. So you choose. Yeah.
But the first thing he does before he goes after the Matrix is he needs more troops. Unicron remakes Megatron into what is now Galvatron. The other wounded become basically new Decepticons. Like there's Scourge is one of them. Cyclonus is another one. Anyway, it's a bunch of new guys, and they all, their transformations are all like Cybertron based. So they don't look like stuff from Earth. They look like they're Cybertronian crafts, and Megatron's like a Cybertronian like cannon, like laser cannon.
Basically. Yeah, Megatron's always like a gun or something. Yeah.
They go to Cybertron first because they need more people. And lo and behold, I guess Starscream came out on top because they are literally having a ceremony and putting a crown on Starscream's head.
This surprised me. I didn't know this would happen the way that it did. So they're crowning Starscream. He's, you know, trying to rush the whole thing because, of course, he wants to be leader as fast as he can. And then this is when Galvatron comes in. They're also given a new ship, Galvatron and his new group. So they fly in, and it's like basically Starscream's upset that people are interrupting his ceremony.
Well, Starscream says, "Who disrupts my coronation?" And Megatron's like, "Coronation? This is bad comedy."
Yeah, he is complete just ashes at that point. He's gone. Yeah,
there's nothing left of Starscream. And I was like, no, because Starscream is my favorite character. And it's just, man, I remember the first time seeing this, I did not expect that to happen whatsoever.
No, I forgot about that. So I was surprised when I saw that happen.
And just for those, like, if you know it or don't, like, Starscream getting destroyed in this movie, just like I talked about the appearance of Unicron, something happens in Beast Wars that involves Starscream being destroyed in this movie. So, and it's nice. A lot of fun. It involves Waspinator also, and it's the best thing ever.
Oh,
Waspinator.
Yeah.
Basically, what happens next is we see Unicron goes after the Cybertron moon bases, and on one base is Jazz and Cliffjumper. They are radioing Autobot City, where the other crew kind of picks it up, and they're like, oh my god, this thing's coming. Jazz and Cliffjumper, bye. Unicron devours that thing. Bumblebee and Spike are on the next moon. They're just like, okay, well, let's blow this thing up. So they, I guess the moon base is rigged with bombs. They try to take off in a ship. As Unicron's eating that moon, they blow the moon up. Doesn't phase Unicron at all. Bye. Those two are gone. Yeah. So it's like, oh my god. And as this is happening, they're just the Autobots left on Earth, which is hardly any, because I guess most of the Autobots are dead. We see Wheeljack's dead body, which is really sad because I like Wheeljack. The only ones that are left basically is like Ultra Magnus, Hot Rod, Cup, RC, Springer, Blur, Perceptor, and then Daniel. Oh, and the Dinobots. The Dinobots are still alive. Thank God. So they're like, okay, what do we do? And then freaking Galvatron and the Decepticons come and attack. And it's just like, man, one fight after another in this movie. Like, they cannot get a freaking break. So there's these two ships that the Autobots have left. And they're trying to get in the ship so they can escape. In one ship, you've got Hot Rod, Cup, and the Dinobots. Everybody else is in the second ship. So they get in outer space. The Decepticons are giving chase. They blast Hot Rod, Cup, and the Dinobots ship. That ship crashes onto this planet that is ruled over by, well, it's most of the robots on here are the Sharktacons, which are like these big piranha kind of transformers, as well as like other like alligator looking dudes. And there's a big robot squid and stuff. And the Quintessons are basically slave masters here. There's some sort of like judge, and the main Quintesson is acting as the judge. And, well, I mean, it's like a court, and they're taking people prisoner. And basically, I don't get the significance of why they're having like this court. It just may be a fun way to kill people.
I guess I don't get it either, because it's like every single time you would say innocent, and then they would kill him anyway.
I never understood it either. The main Quintesson, the one that he's got different heads.
Yeah.
He comes up quite a bit in the third and fourth season of Transformers, the show. And he's got a huge role in a very significant event in Transformers that I won't talk about in case we end up doing seasons 3 and 4 at some point, because I would like to. But he has a major role. So basically, Cup and Hot Rod got separated from the Dinobots. They get captured. The Dinobots meet this little guy named Wheelie,
Oh, yeah.
Who is kind of funny, and it makes Grimlock angry by shooting a slingshot at his face. And oh, yeah. Grimlock's such a child. I love it. Why boy hurt my nose? He kind of befriends the Dinobots because he injures Grimlock's nose. And I guess they get somehow respect for him. So they, and then all together, they go and rescue Cup and Hot Rod. And Wheelie knows of a ship and leads them to the ship so they can get off this planet. On the flip side of that, the Decepticons are destroying the crap out of the other ship. They go into the front part of the ship and detach from like 75% of it. I guess it can detach itself. And they blow that part up, so the Decepticons think that they killed them. But in all reality, like, they actually are on the smaller part, and that crashes on the planet of Junk, which is so cool.
Okay, so maybe you know, like, what are the dudes on the Junk planet called? Are they just called, like, Junk Bots?
They're the Junkions.
Junkion, of course, they're the Junkions.
And Wreck-Gar is the leader. And they're so crazy. I just love these guys because there's nothing like them.
It's interesting just the way that Wreck-Gar speaks, because he only speaks like in commercial and radio or like TV. Like,
yeah,
he only speaks like an advertisement, basically.
It's like, it's almost like they didn't know how to talk, and they're like intercepting television from Earth, and that's how they learned to talk.
Exactly. So
they only speak as like infomercials. Like,
right.
Which is kind of cool. Here they can't get a break either, because so Galvatron thinks that they killed Ultra Magnus and the Matrix and everything. Unicron torches them, is like, no, you didn't. Get to the planet of Junk. So they go there. They find them trying to repair the ship. So the Decepticons attack again. Ultra Magnus gets killed hard. Dude explodes.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, good Lord. So Galvatron gets the Matrix and leaves. Like, peace out. But it's not like, hey, I'm going to take this back to my master, Unicron. He's like, hey, now that I have this, I'm going to control Unicron. And Unicron's like, you know, farts out of his mouth, that big old boom.
Oh, right.
Like, he's super mad. And it's like, as the other Autobots are recovering from this attack and Ultra Magnus being killed, then the Junkions attack them. And it's like, good Lord, like, when are they going to, they can't even breathe, man.
But eventually, I think it's Hot Rod, because he had just learned the like universal greeting from Cup. Yeah. And so he uses that universal greeting with the Junkions and just suddenly makes peace with all of them. So, I mean, it was when Cup had used it, he used it against the Sharkticons, but it didn't really work because they didn't have enough Energon or something to give them. So it was kind of a failed attempt, but it was this comes back full circle with the Junkions and it actually works. And they have like a
they have a
Transformer
dance.
Yeah.
That's a Weird really Al Yankovic weird song playing too, if you didn't catch that.
Yes, that's what I was thinking, because it sounded like him.
Yeah. It was Dare to Be Stupid was the song.
Yes. Which is, that felt so weird being part of this movie, but I was like, I accept it, whatever.
Yeah, I think it's like, if it was any other thing and not the Junkions, it would make zero sense. Like, it still didn't make a lot of sense, but the Junkions are so crazy and wacky that you're kind of like, all right, I can let it slide, I guess. Because they're just goofy as hell. And all the Junkions turn into motorcycles, which is kind of fun, because one Junkion will be riding a transformed Junkion. They get knocked over. The one that was riding will transform into the motorcycle, and then the motorcycle will transform into a Junkion and ride on him. And I thought that was kind of cool. I like that idea.
It was actually fortunate that Ultra Magnus got blown up here, because the Junkions, being around so much junk, like, they automatically know how to repair basically anything, and they fix him right up.
Yeah, they put him back together. They even polished him.
Yeah. Didn't have any scratches on him or anything.
Yeah, he was all shiny and new. I did like one scene where like one of the Junkions, like, Grimlock is bent over, like, I guess trying to talk to them, and one of them kisses Grimlock on the nose, and he's like, ah! He's always talking about himself in third person, and it's always about how he's king, or he's like the best there is. It's just so funny. I love him so much. He's a great
character.
And he's I feel like his character is a little bit different in this than the show, because he's a lot more like easygoing with the other Autobots in this. Whereas, you know, you remember from us watching the show is he was very standoffish with the other Autobots. Like, he still helped them, but he was very standoffish, very moody, very grim. And this, he's really silly. And like, when he's in the ship with Cup and them, like, he keeps getting his nose in the way because he wants to look out the big window. And he wants to look out the window to tell him stories.
Yeah, to tell him war stories. That's right.
Yeah. So Cup's telling him and the other Dinobots stories like they're kids.
Yeah, exactly.
So where we go from here, the Junkions also have a ship. And they basically, Ultra Magnus is like, yeah, the Matrix is gone. They got it. And they know that it's Galvatron has it and he's going to Unicron. So they're like, okay, we've got to go destroy Unicron. And it's actually it was like Wreck-Gar was, I think, the one that told them where Galvatron was going. Cause I guess Unicron must be pretty well known. And I think the Autobots and Decepticons were the ones that didn't know much about him because all the other races seemed to know.
Mm-hmm.
So the Junkions are like, you know what? We're going to help you. They erect a ship. They get in it. So they got two ships now heading straight for Unicron and Cybertron. Like, so Unicron is approaching Cybertron. Galvatron tries to open the Matrix because he knows Unicron's going to try to destroy Cybertron, which is his planet. It won't work. And so he orders the Decepticons to start attacking. And I thought this was cool because this is where, like, Unicron, and we didn't know that he could transform, but he can, and he transforms into a massive robot. I mean, just, it's so big that, like, at one point he slaps Cybertron with his hand, and it's like his whole hand is almost covering like half of Cybertron, like destroying it. And I like the desperation here where Galvatron transforms, like, and he's on Unicron's chest and just starts firing at his face.
Oh,
just,
yeah.
Just like, he's just like, he's like, oh God, I screwed up.
Everybody
Unicron
is
just
attacking.
Swallows him like a pill.
Everybody is attacking him at this point.
The Autobots and the Junkions show up and start attacking.
The Dinobots
through his eye.
The Dinobots go after his butt, and I think they even comment they're gonna bite his butt or something.
Grimlock literally says, "Me Grimlock kick butt."
Yeah, that's right.
But yeah, they're all attacking, and so like I said, one of the Autobots drove the ship through his eye. I think the Junkions. We see Wreck-Gar and Perceptor was with the Junkions, and we see they survive because we see them later. But I believe most of the Junkions probably get killed because he grabs their ship, crushes it, and throws it through space. Which I was like, dang, like all those guys we just got.
God. Kind of throwaway characters. But if any of them survived, they could probably put each other back together at least.
Yeah, true. And maybe that's how Wreck-Gar and Perceptor are there later.
Yeah.
So now it's like most of the main guys are inside of Unicron. Hot Rod gets separated. Because they fall different ways, and they're trying to survive because all these pieces inside of Unicron are attacking them, and they're just trying to get through it and stuff. Daniel ends up finding his way into, and Daniel's wearing this exosuit. That's why he can be in space. He's wearing basically a robot suit. He finds this like big vat of like acid or something, and it's dropping robots into it, and they're melting. And dude, that scene where it shows those two in there and it shows them like melting and the screams. Oh, that scared me as a kid.
Yeah, woo! That's kind of the equivalent of the cartoon shoe getting dropped in the acid in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, it's oh, man, it's bad.
It's just complete obliteration.
Well, they see Bumblebee, Cliffjumper, Jazz, and Spike are on this conveyor belt heading towards the acid, and Spike screaming for he screamed for Daniel to close the thing, and he doesn't know how to use it, and
it's all up to Daniel at that point. And yeah. Daniel up to this point has been pretty useless for the most part, so everybody's getting real nervous, especially Spike, who's just like yelling at him,
screaming at him. He's like, hurry!
Yeah.
because he's gonna die.
Yeah. And he's like, I don't know how to use the gun, the cannons on this. And then he figures it out at the last minute, and he's able to shut one of the gates of the, or shut one of the lids of the sides of the lid of the vat.
Yeah.
And that saves their lives.
So at least a couple of our first generation guys survived.
Yeah. Thanks to Daniel. Luckily.
We get three of them. Yeah.
At the last minute.
Thanks to Daniel. So he actually had a redeeming scene.
Well, yeah, he actually did something very important.
On the flip side of that, Hot Rod, who was separated from the rest of them, finds Galvatron. And Galvatron, and I think this is interesting. At first, Galvatron recognizes Hot Rod as, like it or not, you and I are allies, and we have to stop Unicron together. But then Unicron still has that hold over Galvatron, and he can torture him. So he starts doing that, and then Galvatron's like, okay, I can't do anything. I'm going to have to kill Hot Rod. So there's this big fight between those two, which was a pretty good fight, too, because they're really going at it.
The thing that Unicron can do to Galvatron is basically at his command, he can just basically make him be in intense pain and paralyze him in his place. So he's slowly killing him. It's almost like getting shocked by being electrocuted slowly.
Yeah.
And so he really has no choice. Either he dies like this or he just follows Unicron's command, even though he keeps trying to rebel against him. Like, ultimately, Unicron just has control.
Well, it's like, I mean, you know, Megatron, as much as him and Starscream butted heads, Megatron is a lot like Starscream. So him being Galvatron now, of course he's going to want to, like, he even made that deal with Unicron first just to survive. So of course he's going to go ahead and, even though he doesn't want to, he's going to go with it because it's a means of survival.
Mm-hmm.
So even if Cybertron gets destroyed, it's like, at least I'll be alive kind of thing. So
yeah, true. I mean, Megatron at the end of the day is really all about himself.
Yes, exactly. That's why he's supposed to be the bad guy.
Yeah, well, true. Makes sense.
During the battle, Hot Rod gets his hands on the Matrix, rips it from Galvatron's neck because he's wearing it like on a chain around his neck. He opened it. He becomes something else. Like, he doesn't really transform, but something in him changes. Like, his colors change. His voice changes a little bit.
Well, he does transform in a sense that he like grows.
Yeah, he gets bigger.
He gets bigger and he kind of bulks out a little bit more.
Yeah. And you hear Optimus's voice say, "Arise, Rodimus Prime." So it's like he's now become one of the primes. So, and this goes back to the whole Primus thing. So Primus's spirit kind of gets passed down and inhabits the leaders through this Matrix. Optimus, without the Prime thing, he would have just been Optimus, not Optimus Prime. So now Rodimus is truly a prime. He's now Rodimus Prime. And he grabs Galvatron, throws him through Unicron, like literally goes through his like stomach and falls out into space. He finishes opening the Matrix, saying the words now, like, light our darkest hour. And so the Matrix is basically the big weapon that could, the only thing that can destroy Unicron. And it starts working. Unicron just starts exploding from the inside. And basically everybody escapes, you know, because you got to have some people live through this movie. Everyone else is dead.
I was surprised that anybody was able to, but
I know
they escaped. And I think while, you know, Unicron was exploding from the inside, his head detaches from his body.
Yes.
I don't know.
Which is very important.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if it was something that he intentionally did or if it just happened, but
it just happened.
Yeah, so his head floats off.
Yeah, it's very, very important for not only this series, but other Transformers series, including, like I've said, like Beast Wars, this is important also, and some of the others too.
Rodimus is transformed, like his vehicle mode is basically like a hot rod with a big trailer on the back, kind of.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, he used to be basically just a hot rod. He used to be a sports car, and now he's like a big... Like, I don't even know how you describe it, but he's big. He's real big.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a nice little moment because he catches up with the other Autobots and he's very commanding now. You know, he is the leader.
He gets that deeper voice.
They transform. They all shoot out of Unicron's other eyeball.
Yeah, that's
and
great.
And then that's when the head blows off and travels through space and the body explodes. And this is the one thing that I don't like about the movie is I felt the end was very rushed because it goes from Unicron exploding to the survivors are on Cybertron. This includes all of the main Autobots that have survived up to this point. If we didn't say that they died, then they're still alive. And Wreck-Gar from the Junkions is there. I'm assuming some of the Decepticons survived, but I don't know that they really show any specifically, but some of them have to be there. But anyway, Hot Rod gives a speech and he says that this is basically, this will mark the end of the Cybertronian War, which is a big deal for the Transformers because this war has been going on for millennia, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And then he says that like they're going to, and this is why it's like you said, the Decepticons, there's probably some in there because he's saying that they're going to march forward together and yes. until all are one. And that's something that was kind of a recurring saying throughout the movie was till all are one. Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of like their motto. And but then the movie just kind of ends. Well, you see the last bit, you see Unicron's head floating through space and it freeze frames on that when the credits roll. And, you know, it freeze frames on that because his head still being there is a very important plot point for future things to come. So,
yeah. So, I mean, it did feel a little rushed at the end, but it still had an important, I guess, not even a stinger at the end, just kind of a uh-oh.
Yeah, what's gonna happen? Yeah, it's almost, it's not a stinger, but it almost kind of is. It's just like a, oh, this seems significant. Something is going on here.
Yeah, and for all we know at that point, though, it's like the head could just be junk and he's dead because it's not like there's a flash in the eye or anything. It's literally just his head floating off.
Right.
Well, Chris, looks like it's about time we pass on our own leadership matrices onto our inner kids, see if they've got both the touch and the power to review the Transformers the movie.
Oh my God, this is the best movie ever! And I have all of the lines memorized, and I don't have all the toys, but that's okay, because I'm saving up my money for an exosuit like Daniel had. Except I'm gonna be way better at it, because Daniel is stupid. But I gave this Transformer movie 5 bowls of Shucktacon cereal bits out of 5.
This movie throws a lot of characters at you, as well as a winding road of subplots, so it may be tough to keep track of if you weren't already a viewer of the original show. That said, I still think you can come into this blindly and be entertained, even lacking familiarity. Even though it didn't fare too well when it was initially released, it has since earned a well-deserved cult following. With an amazing cast, an interesting and franchise-altering storyline, top-notch robot-v-robot battles, and a very wide variety of characters from the Transformers universe, I'd give Transformers the movie 5 big bowls of Constructicon cereal out of 5. From the toys, to the cartoons, to the animated movie, Transformers has managed to, what's another word for make a thorough or dramatic change in form or appearance? Oh well. Long story short, Transformers rocked.
What do you think, if we were Transformers, Joseph, what do you think you would transform into?
I would rather be a Dinobot, so... Oh, no. What about Godzilla-bot? I'll just be Godzilla. I'll just be Godzilla in robot form. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll be Mechagodzilla, basically.
I think I would want to be a Dinobot, too, and, like... Oh, man, there's so many, like, cool ones to go with. Like, I feel like... Something like Snarl, like he was the Stegosaurus. We didn't get to see him in this one. That would be cool. Or that one that's looks kind of like a Kangaskhan from Pokemon. It's got the big thing on its head. You can headbutt stuff. But like with my I would probably end up being, Ankylosaurus, the little armadillo looking thing with the club on its
tail. Yeah,
the one
with the club tail. Yeah.
I think with my luck, I think it would end up being that. But if that happened, I would try to make the best of it.
well, let's just do it to where we're like a mythical beast. So we could be like a Hydra or something.
Oh, God, yes. I could be a Sasquatch bot.
Oh, yes. So you'd be I'll be the Chupacabra. I'll be a transforming Chupacabra.
And I'll be a Sasquatch.
There you go.
Perfect. So do you have any final thoughts about Transformers the movie?
Final thoughts? I mean, I knew it was a good movie. Even though I've only seen it once, I've heard about it my whole life. Again, and I've seen it twice now, but if you're a fan of the franchise at all and you haven't seen this movie, please watch. Even if you're not, like, check it out, because I think this could turn you into a fan. It's got a lot of things you may not understand, like I said, going into it, but still it's an entertaining movie and there's a lot of fun to it. And it really, as far as the Transformers movies go, especially compared to what we've got now, this is the best of the best. So if you like Transformers at all, check it out.
Oh, yeah. This is like, hands down, this is like 1,000 times better than any of the Michael Bay movies. I mean, it's like not even close of a comparison. I mean, that said, obviously, I love this movie. I think the animation is gorgeous. The music is crazy and full of energy. And there's just so much action. There's just so much action that it's almost nonstop. And they don't even shy away at all from death and high stakes, even though that means killing off everyone's favorite characters. This movie was literally like our Game of Thrones back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
There are some flaws, like I talked about earlier, like there's missing characters. There's a few scenes with some questionable writing. And like I said, I think that the ending after Unicron was destroyed felt a little rushed, but it's still an amazing piece of animated cinema regardless. And I know that I'll continue to watch it in the future, as this is honestly one of my all-time favorite movies. Also, if you like Transformers, if you liked the music from this movie, okay, so you gotta check out this band called the Cybertronic Spree. And they have the most amazing Transformers cosplay you've ever seen, and they wear it while they perform every show. And at the shows, they cover a lot of the songs from this movie. They have a few original songs, and they also cover songs from other nerdy IPs. Like Joseph, I sent you a cover of where they did the Pokemon theme song.
The Pokemon theme. That was so good. That's the first time I had heard them. That was hilarious.
It was like the best cover of that I've ever heard in my life. So
seriously.
So go look for the Cybertronic Spree on Bandcamp and YouTube, because you will enjoy it.
Well, Chris, again, happy birthday. Happy late birthday, early birthday, happy just birthday in general.
Yay.
Yeah, it was fun watching this movie again for my second time.
Agreed. For my maybe triple digits time.
Nice. Well, listeners, looks like our milk supply has now run dry, so it's time for us to say goodbye. Next week, we'll be watching
My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, suggested via Ben, who sent us this request via a video, which was kind of fun. So thanks, Ben, even though you picked this. man.
Thanks, Ben.
I think
it'll be fun. I hope. Well, once again, I'm Joseph.
And I'm Chris.
And we'll see you next Saturday.
Presented by NerdSloth,
a place for lazy nerds.
If you like what you heard, consider donating at patreon.com/nerdsloth so we can continue bringing you quality shows. Be sure to also leave us a review and share your favorite episodes and clips on social media. If you're looking for more content, visit us at nerdsloth.com.